Gerald Ford became the 38th president of this country only because his predecessor, Richard Nixon, resigned the office. His presidency lasted only 865 days because he was defeated for election on his own by Jimmy Carter. So the question becomes, why is Gerald Ford's presidency worth examining? Because surely it didn't last long enough to have much impact. Historian John Robert Green takes exception to that idea, and he's a tough guy to argue with, having just completed a new book, The Presidency of Gerald R. Ford. He'll be speaking at the library tonight, and he joins us again here this morning. So good to have you back.
It is good to be Welcome. Back. I've looked forward to it.
Yeah, good deal. Well, you described the Ford presidency as one of the most misunderstood of any administration in American history. How could such a brief presidency be so misunderstood?
Well, it can be misunderstood because people have looked at it from the point of view of Saturday Night Live. They've looked at it from Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase stumbling down the steps.
There was a poll done, I think it was a few years ago, and they showed school kids pictures of Chevy Chase and President Ford, and a bunch said, which one's the president of the United States? And they said Chevy Chase.
I'm afraid to find the answer there.
Because you see that so often. And so you get this picture of Ford as being a bumbling incompetent. And that couldn't be further from the truth. He's our only president who's been drafted by a professional football team.
Yeah.
You know, and he was not only competent, but he was an incredibly skilled politician. If we're going to judge our presidential offices by people who are defeated, you know, then we've got to give up on an awful lot of people. The importance of the importance of the Ford presidency goes beyond the pardon. It goes into foreign policy. It goes into domestic policy. It goes into tax policy. You know, it's really, really critically important.
Did he want to be president?
Yes. He wanted to be president in 1976. He wanted to be elected to his own term. In 1974 and before, his major ambition was to be Speaker of the House. But Richard Nixon plucked him, not out of obscurity. In Washington, everybody knew Gerry Ford. Outside of Washington, no one knew him.
Yeah.
But he plucked him because he knew that he would be confirmed. Ford was the first president to be confirmed under the 25th Amendment, where the president can choose and then the Senate and the House get to vote on him as vice president.
We're visiting with John Robert Green about the presidency of Gerald Ford. You know, Bob, if you snap your fingers and ask somebody on the street what Ford did as president, you might get his pardon of Richard Nixon,
yes,
but not a whole lot else. What should be on that list?
When I asked President Ford what the most important thing he did as president was, that's not good grammar, but what are you going to do? It's early. He said, and I quote, "If I'm remembered for anything, it's for healing this land." When President Carter, Jimmy Carter, was inaugurated in January of 1977, he turned to President Ford, catching him completely off guard, and said, "I want to thank my predecessor for all he did to heal this land." And Ford got up and shook his hand. That's it. What Ford was able to do was to get us from Watergate to Carter. And that was no mean task.
No mean task. Why, Bob?
Because there was so much distrust in the country. When Gerald Ford comes to Kansas City, and he comes in 1976, and
the last great political convention,
he is almost defeated by Ronald Reagan on the floor of the convention when Reagan throws the Hail Mary pass to try and get Dick Schweiker to be vice president. When he comes here, his negatives are through the floor. And a completely unknown former governor of Georgia, you know, is beating him at the polls. That says something about the presidency at that time and what Richard Nixon did to it. And yet today, Ford is consistently given high marks for honesty, for being a scandal-free administration. And I do not exempt the pardon from that. There was no deal. Period. Mm-hmm. There was no deal.
I was going to ask, of course.
But what Ford did was he put a Band-Aid on Watergate, and he put a Band-Aid on Vietnam, the two great crises of the post-1960 period, got us to Jimmy Carter, whose I find Carter's presidency to be more flawed and failed than Ford's, and then into the conservative era, the Reagan-Bush-Clinton era.
I mean, no question, and everybody, I think, agreed with this, Democrats, Republicans, everybody, Gerald Ford was a great guy.
I enjoyed every minute that I had to spend with Gerald Ford. I mean, I don't want to misrepresent myself. I wasn't a personal friend of President Ford's. I worked with him at several conferences in his name, and I interviewed him on a number of occasions. A true gentleman, of the old school, reminded me an awful lot of the same type of interactions I had with the first President Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Ford was liked on both sides of the aisle. And that was one of the reasons that Nixon chose him for vice president, because mm-hmm. he knew that he'd be confirmed and he'd get Democratic votes.
Yeah. Let's go to the pardon.
I wonder why you want to do that.
Yeah. It came exactly, as you write in the book, a mm-hmm. month into his presidency. He had gotten off to such a good start. Mm-hmm. And then this on a Sunday, completely out of nowhere, he did it. Why?
Well, I'll explain more about this at the Plaza Branch tonight at
6:30. Yeah.
He did it because he found that he was not able – well, let me put it this way. Ford came into office thinking that just by virtue of his inauguration, the country was going to start forgetting about Richard Nixon and want to move on. What Ford didn't count on was that the press wasn't going to want to move on. And at his first press conference, Ford was literally stunned by the fact that out of 32 questions, 28 of them dealt with Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
And he came back in after that press conference, and he was livid with rage, got his staff together, and started moving the pardon forward. There was no deal prior to the inauguration. I'll talk more about that tonight.
He's livid with rage because the attention of a country is so riveted on Nixon.
The attention of the press was riveted on Nixon.
And that helps convince him that we've got to move on. We've got to do the pardon to get this behind us and move ahead.
And his many members of his staff said, you know, and I'll quote Hugh Scott, who said, "My God, Mr. President, you have no sense of timing." You know, it, as you said, it was a month. And the key to the
when
pardon,
he issued the pardon.
When he issued the pardon. Mm-hmm. The key, and this is a unique pardon. Pardons are usually issued after indictment, after you have been charged in the courts with something and an indictment has come down.
And Ford makes a calculation, Bob, that he doesn't want to go down that road.
No, he doesn't. And he uses several lawyers and finds out and gets advice that he doesn't have to go down that road, that he can pardon before indictment. And many of his political friends are saying, wait until Nixon is charged. Wait until Leon Jaworski, the special prosecutor, gets his pound of flesh, charges Nixon with a crime, charges him with obstruction of justice, and then pardon him. Nobody was telling him not to pardon him. They all thought it was too early.
Was it too early?
Yes. If it had,
for the sake of the mood of the country, would have been better served by waiting until the indictment
for
came.
For the sake of Ford's presidency, it would have been better served. Since it came too early, it allowed Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, Frank Church, you know, others who wanted the presidency to beat Ford up with it for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
If he had waited until just before the election, possibly just before the nomination, he would have had an easier time.
But his point was that by waiting, he's sacrificing his presidency.
That's correct.
His presidency is mm-hmm. on the altar of Richard Nixon. He's mm-hmm. got to get Nixon in the background so he can move ahead and do something on behalf of the country.
What he should have done was fire Henry Kissinger. What he should have done was clean house of all the Nixon people in his administration, and it would have done the same thing.
Why didn't he?
Because he was told the way that he explained it to me was, you know, I can still hear him saying this. He says, you know, Bob, when the plane is flying, you don't shoot the pilot. You know, and he came this close. Well, we're on radio. I'm holding my fingers up here,
yes,
real tiny.
Thank you.
You know, he came this close to saying we didn't know what we were doing. And that's not entirely true. He kept Al Haig as a de facto chief of staff. He kept Henry Kissinger. He kept other people in the Kissinger orbit like Don Rumsfeld. And there were people saying you've got to divest yourself of the Nixon people, then get your feet on the ground, be Gerald Ford, which is your greatest asset, then pardon Richard Nixon.
It seems like such a logical thing to do in a transition like this when your predecessor is so marred by scandal and controversy that you'd want to excise the folks around Nixon to give yourself a clean slate and move ahead.
No question.
But again, he didn't do it.
No question. I mean, Gerald Ford was a good man. I know that as a historian for a fact. But that's not why he pardoned Richard Nixon. He pardoned Richard Nixon for political reasons. He pardoned him because, as president of the United States, he didn't feel that he could move forward with his administration without getting rid of the ghost of Richard Past.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the pardon was that it didn't do that. It was too soon and it was on Nixon's terms. He had to negotiate what to do with the papers as part of the pardon. It was all on Nixon's terms.
I want to ask you about that. But again, just to wrap this up, mm-hmm. so the timing of the pardon was strictly and purely a Gerald Ford decision.
Absolutely.
1 month after his taking over.
Absolutely. He caught his entire entourage by surprise.
Why was the pardon completely in Richard Nixon's favor? There were several conditions. I want to say three conditions. And Nixon got everything he wanted.
He got everything he wanted because Ford had come to the conclusion that he wanted to give the pardon at that time. And I got the impression from talking with these people, the part of the pardon that was really – there were two parts that were difficult. The first was getting Nixon to accept it. And Ford wanted Nixon to give an act of contrition and say, I'm sorry, as part of the pardon. So he figured that would get it all done with. And Nixon refused.
And that wouldn't come until the big interviews he had
with David Frost.
David Frost, yeah.
And the second part was that they were sitting on almost 23 million pages of documents, tapes, and everything in the White House. And at that time, it's no longer the case, but at that time, the papers of the president were the personal property of the president.
Yeah.
They're now the property of the people of the United States. Ford wanted to get those things out of Dodge. He wanted them out of Washington. He didn't want to have them subpoenaed. Ford was terrified that Jaworski was going to subpoena some of these papers and Ford would have to be the one to say yes or no with mm-hmm. executive privilege. So he just said, get the papers out of here. You know, and Nixon thought it was going to be a bargaining chip. And what Ford's staff did was gave Richard Nixon all these papers.
I mean, it's really astonishing to read this and to look at this idea that Richard Nixon was in a position to bargain over his own pardon.
That's a very good point.
It's absolutely breathtaking because in hindsight, you wouldn't think he had any leverage whatsoever.
And the leverage comes from having Al Haig and Henry Kissinger still in the White House.
Yeah.
And Bryce Harlow, a name who's not very well known but was very well known in political circles, Republican Party circles at the time, with Ford in his face every mm-hmm. single day. So it wasn't Richard Nixon picking up the phone negotiating with Gerry Ford. It was Haig and Kissinger. They were pushing Ford, then lawyers negotiating with each other, and they went forward on September 9th and Ford pardoned him. And for all intents and purposes, you know, that was the most important thing domestically that happened in his presidency.
But in fairness to Gerald Ford,
mm-hmm.
history has been kind
yes.
to this decision. People now look back and say, by George, he did the right thing.
Of course. And in 2001, the Kennedy Library gives Ford a Profiles in Courage Award.
Yes, yes.
And
to really help jumpstart this new kind of thinking about what he had done.
And when you get that as a Profiles in Courage Award, you stop and think about the courageousness of the decision. I didn't find an awful lot of courage in the decision. Everything that I read, everyone I talked to, they were very matter of fact about it. Richard Nixon was going to get pardoned. He was going to get pardoned by Gerald Ford. He was going to get pardoned before the end of the first term of a Ford presidency. He was going to get pardoned, hopefully, although this didn't turn out that way, before there was a challenge to Gerald Ford by Ronald Reagan or another conservative.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that Gerald Ford was pardoned too early on Richard Nixon's terms, and that has made it look like what Gerald Ford was trying to do was to do the right thing.
And you're saying, Bob, that it was so inevitable that Ford was going to pardon Nixon because why?
Because he had to get that off his desk to have his own administration.
Okay.
There was no deal, period. There's no evidence of it whatsoever.
John Robert Green is our guest. We're talking about his new book on the presidency of Gerald R. Ford. It's called exactly that. He speaks at 6:30 tonight at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. You can RSVP by going to kclibrary.org to grab a seat. What was he like to work for, Bob? Because among the folks who worked for him are names that are familiar to mm-hmm. us even many years later, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, and others. What was he like to work for?
They called it the Ford Foundation. That was everybody who worked for Gerry Ford inevitably ended up working for Reagan or Bush. Ford's temperament, Steve, was a was a legislative temperament. Legislators, unlike executives, governors, mayors, presidents, legislators tend to be more collegial. They tend to like to sit around, get the opinion of their staff, lobbyists, constituents, and they tend to be a little bit more spatial thinkers with their staff, open-door mm-hmm. policies. Executives, they have chiefs of staff. Mm-hmm. They have people who control their time. You know, Ford's was a legislative temperament. He brings that into the White House, and he comes up with this cockamamie idea that he called the spokes to a wheel concept, that every person in his staff was equally distant from the hub of the wheel, which was the president. Now, you can't do that in Washington. Washington doesn't run on money. Mm-hmm. Washington doesn't run on food. It runs on ego. Mm-hmm. And you can't – you get these guys – you know, they fought to be closer to the wheel. Ford enjoyed – and of course, the famous any picture you want to pick of Gerry Ford sitting back with a pipe in his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how he was. When I would talk with him, when I saw him interact with people, he would sit back and he'd have the pipe in his mouth and he'd be looking at the ceiling.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't turning you off. He was thinking he loved that give and take.
Uh-huh.
The people who you just named are executive mindset. You've got Cheney. You've got Rumsfeld. You've got Kissinger. You've got all these people. They took advantage of that. They took advantage of that to advance their own power position. In the end, what happened was that the Ford staff, you asked how it was to work for him, it was a challenge because all these people were trying to cut each other's throats.
Wow. And he let that happen.
He did. And that and had there been a second Ford term, and I did talk with him about this, what Ford would have done, he had brought in Don Rumsfeld as his chief of staff. And Rumsfeld was starting to tighten things up, and then Rumsfeld went over to defense in a shakeup, mm-hmm. and he brought in a little-known junior assistant, Dick Cheney, mm-hmm. who became chief of staff. Dick Cheney was, I don't know, 32, 33, was a child at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was beginning to – you can see in the documents that Cheney's beginning to learn the ropes on how to control the staff with a much lighter touch that Don Rumsfeld had. Had there been a second Ford term, Cheney would absolutely have been reappointed chief of staff, and it would have been a different Ford White House.
As a final point, Bob, Gerald Ford barely loses the 76 election to mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter. Huge comeback in the final weeks. Bob Dole of Kansas is Gerald Ford's running mate. How did Ford take the loss, the narrowness of the loss, and what could have been?
He was devastated, and Betty was devastated. He thought that he could beat Carter. He never believed that the American people were going to elect someone with so little experience. He thought that he was going to be able to parlay his presidential character, which he clearly had developed, into a victory. But Gerald Ford lost that here in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Gerald Ford lost it because Ronald Reagan almost took the nomination from him. And a lot of conservatives sat that election out and did not support Ford through to the end. Had Ford defeated Reagan earlier, had it not been quite as nasty a convention as it was yeah. here in Kansas City, Ford might have been able to hold those conservatives and win the election.
John Robert Green is the author of The Presidency of Gerald R. Ford. He's a professor of history and humanities at Cazenovia College. It is always good to have you here.
I look forward to it. Thank you.